We bring in our luggage. It's Louis.
It was Louis. Because Travis Hunter played 120 plus snaps.
And was the most dynamic player on the field for all four quarters. Jadeur Sanders, outstanding. FBS, Division I, Power 5. First time he's playing in a game like that. 500 yards passing. Five touchdowns or four touchdowns?
Five combined. 520 yards passing?
It was over
510 or 520.
It was over 500 yards passing. Unbelievable game. And Coach Prime, in his premiere, shows everyone what primetime's about. Now, does this mean that Colorado is going to win the Pac-12 this year? Absolutely not.
No.
And I think everybody that's throwing that out there needs to pump the brakes. Is Colorado better than most people thought they would be? Yes. And the major media heads are going to use Colorado as their talking point. Why the transfer portal is a valuable resource to turn a program around immediately. And quite frankly, I got to give my props out. I mean, TCU, we all knew that TCU coming in was not great. And I went back and did a little deep dive on TCU from last year. TCU last year won 8 one-possession games. So sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. You got a little lucky in a lot of games last year. 8 one-possession wins last year. They make it to the national championship. Obviously, they're the Cinderella story. Then they get smoked by UGA. So coming into this, we knew that they weren't going to be great. But wow, I got to give Deion his flowers. Man showed up, had his team ready. Congrats to the Buffs.
One thing that I think I can take away was that they look so fast. So many athletes on that team. They might be one of the fastest teams in the country. They had athletes on both sides of the ball, and their defense, about what, 49, 48? I can't remember the final score.
I think 42.
40. Yeah, 45, 42. Thank you. All right. 45, 42. There's improvement there, but man, you get out in space. Give me another team in the country with as many kids I can get out in space like that and just absolutely turn the Jets on. Now, I will agree with Matt. Let's pump the brakes on Colorado being contender. Still think that bowl eligibility for them would be a huge success, and I think bowl eligibility might be more in the window in the realm of possibility than it was for Saturday. But overall, be coming. They showed up. They got Nebraska this week. So if they can do it again at home against the former 12 rival, about 2-0, that's huge for Colorado. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, they looked really good. I mean, they looked about as good as Deion was saying they were going to be, too, which is just incredible. I mean, Deion just has starting to come off like he's the type of guy that when he just says something, it just happens. Like he just wills it to be, which is very interesting too. I mean, look at the Pac-12. They have USC, they have Oregon, they have UCLA, they have Utah. All those teams look pretty solid this past week. I mean, I didn't see anything from those teams that made me think, all right, well, maybe one of these teams is a little overrated. Same with Washington too. But throwing Colorado, I mean, the way that they looked against TCU, I feel like they could compete with every team in the Pac-12. I'm not saying they're going to win it. I'm not saying they're have moved way up my favorites leaderboard, but I mean I had them going like maybe 4-8, 5-7 at best. And I think looking at their schedule right now, I think it probably ends up being a little bit better than that. Granted, it's still tough, but I think they'll do better than I thought they would. I thought they would do.
It's the over under when they play USC.
The over under
115.
Oof,
115.
I mean,
that game's going to take 6 hours to play.
I'll give USC this. Their defense looked better this week. But having said that, Vada does not have the dynamic playmakers of Colorado and the speed, like you said, Chad, like the speed that Colorado has on offense really set it really stood out to me because it was just a whirlwind that TCU just couldn't hang with. Now, this is obviously Overreaction Tuesday because yesterday was Labor Day. Out to all the laborers. So, like the three of us who labor very, very hard, but do this anyway because it's all for you folks.
All three of you.
So, but on Overreaction Tuesday, Colorado comes out in the AP poll at number 22, and just think that that even is a little high. I really don't think Colorado should be in the top 25 because they beat a TCU team that was given a bump in the rankings at 17 just because they were like, oh, you're the national runner-up last year. Here's your flowers. But you lost your starting quarterback. You lost your best receiver. Lost pretty much what you had that got you there is gone now.
I don't think 22 is completely over the top, mainly because week one, TCU was 17th at the time. They were the national runner-up. Every win has value that day. The value goes down later in the year, and TCU is a 7-5, 6-6 team. Yet to be seen, the value of the win on Saturday is there, I think, at least for now, after week one, Colorado to be in the top 25. At least now. I'm not saying Colorado is going to be any more than 6-6 at best if they get there, but for now, I think it's reasonable.
Like pretty much what everybody does with rankings, especially the AP poll, all it is they look and see what happened this week. They see the teams that are showy, like everybody wants to see, and then they just put them in the rankings because they're like, you know what? Who's everybody talking about this week? Talking about FSU, talking about Duke Clemson, and they're talking about Colorado because of Deion, because of what they did against TCU, the reigning national champions, even though they did lose a lot of players. And let's not act like TCU looked like a world beater in that game because they did not look good whatsoever. So take that into account as well. Should Colorado be ranked? Should TCU be ranked? Probably not right now. But the fact that they were really showy, like, I understand why they are.
I agree. And another team that showed up in a major way that you actually just mentioned is Florida State. And my goodness. On that note, they were a team that came in as a playoff fringe team, a playoff contender in a lot of people's eyes. They came in ranked number 8, and obviously, again, it's the AP poll. I thought 8 was a good spot for them, but my God, they dominated LSU in that game in the second half in the trenches, and that was what I did not think I would see. I thought it was going to be very much like last year's game where it was a little shaky, looks a little sloppy. But Florida State beat the hell out of LSU on both sides of the ball, especially in the trenches. And that was something I did not expect to see.
Well, it was sloppy. That was one of the ugliest first halves I think we've ever seen. That was awful. I mean, Jordan Travis and oh my goodness. Someone please tell me his name. I know it. Holy crap.
Jaden Daniels.
Thank you. Good Lord. Jaden Daniels and Jordan Travis, man, at points of the first half, they were just kind of chunking the ball up in the air, and it was really ugly. Fumbles and some turnovers, man, that just – they were bad. They were really, really bad. But in the second half, Matt's right, Florida State won in the trenches. They got after Jaden Daniels. They put him on the ground, and they ran the ball down LSU's throat, which is so surprising considering when you look at the two receivers that FSU has that can get out in space – both huge, are about 6'5", I think 6'7".
Keon Coleman had a day. He had three touchdowns.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan State transfer.
He had a freaking day. These guys are so big and get out in space, but that's not even how FSU won the game. FSU just ran it down LSU's throat, and that was the most shocking part of that football game on Sunday night. That was unbelievable. I hate both those teams, so I'm like very happy that LSU got destroyed, but I'm also very, very concerned about how good Florida State is.
I would say, I think one thing I saw from that game that a lot of people weren't talking about is, why is Jordan Travis not being talked about for the Heisman more? Like, that guy's got everything you want. He's got the wheels. He's got the arm. He's improved every single year that he's been at Florida State. This is his fourth year, right, as a starter? Senior year? I'm pretty sure it's his fourth year.
This is third or fourth year. I think he split time his freshman year.
I was going to say, I think he had one or two years where he split time. I think last year was the first full year he was the starter. And he's never looked like a good passer, not until last year. And last year, he finally started to take off. And this year, at least through game one, he looks like a world beater. So it's hard to say. Like, I mean, I knew Florida State was going to be good coming into the season. I think they were a little overranked being top 10. But now that what's happened with LSU, part of me is starting to believe in Florida State a little bit. I kind of like seeing them do what they did to LSU. I could see them being that playoff team that a lot of people are predicting. So let's see what happens with them.
Yeah, and to Chad's point, I think Jordan Travis played really well most of the game. And to your point, Whit, Jordan Travis played really well. The first half, there were at least three instances I can think of where there were drops, where he just hit a receiver right in the hands and they just flat out dropped it. I can't think of the guy's name. Watkins, I believe, is his last name. Big tight end, who they put out in like a slot formation a lot. They used him a lot like a Lane Kiffin kind of offense. Jordan Travis played really well, but I think what was the most surprising to me was seeing Florida State's defense in the, like, going back to, we were talking about how much speed Colorado had. Florida State's defense looks so fast compared to LSU's offense. I mean, first drive of the game, and there I thought that LSU benefited from some really ticky-tack penalties early in that game, too. There was a roughing the passer, or no, it was either roughing the passer or a late hit. An unnecessary roughness, that's what it was. It was an unnecessary roughness that was kind of a very ticky-tack penalty. Extended a drive. LSU on like the, they get the ball on the 1 yard line, and Florida State comes up with a big defensive stand. First drive of the game, LSU goes for it on fourth down.
They stuffed them.
I mean, absolutely smoked. Jaden Daniels goes to drop back and gets sacked for a huge loss on fourth down, and that was the tone setter for the game. LSU, I think, went for another fourth down later in the game, stuffed. Florida State dominated the trenches on defense. They dominated the trenches on offense, but the defensive speed in the secondary and in the linebacker level, Ike Norvell was highly criticized a couple years ago whenever Travis Hunter flipped from being a Florida State commit to Jackson State. And there was even a Twitter Spaces, I don't know if y'all remember this or not, but it went viral because it was called Fire Mike Norvell. And it was every Florida State fan had to introduce himself by first saying, first off, fire Mike Norvell, and then go on to say their whole thing about it. Mike Norvell has turned that program completely around from where Jimbo Fisher left it to where they are now. Props to him. Props to Florida State. I love seeing them back.
And you talk about Mike Norvell, which makes me bring up the point of patience. Fan base is having patience with the coaches, which is going to lead me into my next question for you guys. Who should we be more concerned about going forward? Should we be more concerned about Florida, or should we be more concerned about Clemson the rest of this year and moving forward?
Leave it up to Chad just to find a way to bring up Florida. Of course. Got to find a way.
It was a good transition point.
It's a good question. It's a good question. And honestly,
it was a good transition point.
I think if I'm Clemson, I am more concerned because they've been to the mountaintop. They're on their way down to where, like, and is Florida, like, showing that they're going to be an improved program this year? I don't really know. I mean, obviously against Utah, I think there's a lot of things they could have done that would have made the game a completely different game. And I don't think Utah really looked that good. And I think they could have taken advantage of a couple moments. But to me, Clemson, the last 3 years has just died off. Like, it's something so weird. And it's not like they're recruiting bad. It's not like they're, like, they don't have the right players. It's not like they don't have the right coaches there. I think it might just be the message from Dabo. And that's what I'm starting to get the feel for. Or just like the overall appearance of the program. Like, to me, it feels like there's a lot less Clemson fans than there used to be back in 2016 and 2019, and when they were winning, or 2018 when they were winning national championships. And I feel like there's a lot less fans of Dabo. And I feel like even the guys I know that are Clemson fans are starting to look at the team going, is Dabo ever going to get them back to that point? Because even if he recruits these guys, he's got the Klubnik, the five-star guy. He's got the athletes on the outside. He's got the Shipleys at running back. Their defense is still pretty solid. He brought in Garrett Riley. Their offense was terrible. I mean, it was one of the worst offenses I saw all weekend. And they got destroyed by Duke, who, in my opinion, I don't think Duke looked that great. I don't think they looked bad. I think they looked good for a Duke team. But they looked about how they did last year when they went 9-3. They could go 9-3 again, maybe go 8-4. But that's not a team that's going to make a playoff or compete for an ACC championship. And they just pounced on to Clemson. And it is week one. But if I'm Clemson, that would alarm me. If that happened to Georgia, I'd be terrified.
Yeah, put Mike Elko's name at the top of your coaching search list. Power five teams that are in contention, because Duke is a power five team, but power five team with expectations that are higher than Duke's. Mike Elko better be your number one call. I'm talking to you, College Station. But as I digress, this is completely unbiased opinion. Is biased at the same time. I would be more worried about Clemson if I was a Clemson fan. Look, as far as the game goes for us on Thursday night, I'm not going to spend the whole time talking about Florida because that's not what the show's about. We made a lot of mistakes in the red zone and offensively with our young offensive unit. Kind of stifled how well Graham Mertz played and killed our opportunities to honestly win the game. I felt like that was a game that we could have won Thursday night. I don't really feel like that we were outplayed by Utah. I just think we didn't execute as well as Utah did, and that's what killed us. Clemson made mental errors that are not common Dabo Swinney coach teams. And I'm kind of with you, Witt. I almost think that the message that Dabo is preaching is starting to become stale, like a box of 3 week old whales sitting in your cabinet. That's how stale Dabo Swinney's message has become. And I don't know if any of you guys saw it last night, and I'm not going to read too much into this, but obviously there's a video going around of Dabo trying to high five Cade Klubnik off the field. The TV caught Klubnik just right by him. So I come with you. I kind of wonder if Clemson's message from Dabo is stale and if the players are as bought in as they were a few years ago. And I'm not saying Clemson's going to have a terrible year, but by Clemson's expectations, we might need to start asking some questions.
I think you're seeing the effects. And I said this a couple of weeks ago on this very podcast. Go back and clip it. I think Clemson's day as a playoff contending football program is done right now. Dabo Swinney. It's not really Dabo's fault, in my opinion. In ways, it is. Dabo Swinney relied so much on his coordinators for his success. If you look at Clemson in their heyday, they had Brent Venables at defensive coordinator, now the head coach at Oklahoma, and then he had Tony Elliott as his offensive coordinator, now the head coach of Virginia. So, to me, Dabo's success was so heavily dependent on them, and all he had to be was a rah-rah head coach. All he had to do was go into the locker room and fire somebody up. All he had to do was go out on the road and recruit Trevor Lawrence. All he had to do was go out and get Deshaun Watson. Like and just leave the development of players up to his coordinators. He's in a position now where if you look at Clemson, a recruiting standpoint, there's a lot of talent. There's not a lot of talent development, and that is not a very talented team. I think that overall that team is just not as talented, and I think we put so much weight into high school recruiting and rankings. What has made Kirby Smart so successful at Georgia and what makes Nick Saban so successful at Alabama is they don't just recruit heavy, high-rated players. They turn them into something. There's another level of player development that happens when you get there where they don't have this high school player that is just going to become an NFL star in 3 years. That doesn't happen very often. There's so much talent around college football that you can't just have that. You have to be developed into a better player from where you are as a senior in high school. And that's not happening at Clemson right now. I think Dabo Swinney will be fired. No, absolutely not. I think that they're going to enter into this phase very similar to Bobby Bowden at Florida State, where you're always going to remember what he did for you. And he won two national championships. He's one of, what, four active head coaches right now that has won a national championship, much less multiple. So if you're Clemson, you can't really fire him. I mean, you could, theoretically, but you very much risk becoming Nebraska very quickly. You very much risk that. In the age of NIL, where you've got other programs that are so dialed in, you know, I just really don't think there's much you can do. I'm more concerned, in conclusion, about Clemson than Florida. Florida has Billy Napier, who I think is going to be a really good head coach. He just needs time. He's a good developer of talent. We've seen that before. He just needs time. He doesn't have the roster already constructed like Clemson.
Anything else that we missed? Any y'all want to talk about North Carolina at all? I really don't.
No, I mean,
like, we have to talk about South Carolina flopping, which we all thought was going to happen as far as them being fraudulent.
I mean, I thought South Carolina was a better team than North Carolina. I just thought
I think I picked them
to win. You did. Yeah. You idiot.
I think
That's fine. I didn't think North Carolina was going to be that good.
Matt, give me the idiot soundbite.
North Carolina better than South Carolina. Neither of them very good.
Either of them are very good. This is a great synopsis by Matt. So South Carolina's offensive line is terrible. Anybody else see this? Spencer Rattler running for his life. And need I remind you how bad North Carolina's defense has been the past couple of seasons? UNC, defensively, absolutely impressive. And they made me look like a complete idiot picking South Carolina to win the game. And I'm not super concerned about South Carolina going forward, mainly because I don't really have an expectation that's more than maybe 6 or 7, maybe 8 wins for South Carolina. Like, losing that game doesn't really change anything for me. I mean, like I said, I got my pick wrong. I picked South Carolina to win the game, but I also did not expect North Carolina's defense to be as good as it was. And truthfully, I don't know how good North Carolina's defense actually is, considering how bad South Carolina's offensive line played and how often Spencer Rattler was on the ground. I mean, they gave him zero protection. Drake May even made two hideous interceptions that South Carolina could not take advantage of because they just had an inability to protect Spencer Rattler up front, and it was awful. So I'm not super convinced North Carolina's a great team. I think they're in contention for the ACC, but that says more about the ACC than I think it does UNC.
Agree with everything you said. Nothing else to put. I mean, I think South Carolina is exactly what I really thought they would be coming into this season. I don't think they're going to compete for the SEC. I don't think they're going to compete with Georgia or Tennessee. I think Georgia and Tennessee will probably both beat them this year, especially Tennessee after what they did to Tennessee last year in Columbia. So, I think we all are in agreement with what's going on there. That's for sure. Any other teams that look kind of weird? I didn't really get to watch Ohio State. Notre Dame's looked good to start the season.
Ohio State, I'll say this. Notre Dame, Ohio State just got interesting. Because Ohio State's offense looked a little sluggish. Now, Indiana has been decent defensively the past couple years. Make it what you will. But going into South Bend and playing against the Notre Dame team with a competent quarterback, talked about it last week. I think Notre Dame very well could be a game that Notre Dame can't sleepwalk through. But I'm also overreacting entirely after week one. North Carolina could suck. South Carolina could suck. North Carolina could be good. South Carolina could be better than we think. Oklahoma scored 81 points. 73 points.
Oregon scored 81.
Ole Miss scored 73 points, both against very bad, like Ole Miss against a mediocre FCS team.
Washington looked good, but Washington also played a Boise State team who's not the same Boise State they used to be.
but the brand kind of got me. I don't know.
Yeah, but the brand kind of gets you.
Like
there's a lot of things to assess. You could talk about the way DJU played on Sunday against San Jose State. He looked well.
Hey, Emory Jones looked pretty good with Cincinnati.
Emory Jones looked good at Cincinnati. There's so many things that we could talk about.
Tennessee obliterated Virginia.
Well, Virginia's hideous.
I was going to say, I actually got to watch a little bit of that game. I did not think Tennessee looked that good.
Not in the first half. They looked very, very sloppy.
I thought that, I don't want to do this, but I feel like I'm giving Tennessee a pass in the first half because it's the first live action that you're getting. Their defense to me looked better than what I was expecting Tennessee's
against
defense
against Virginia.
To look like. I understand that. I understand that. I mean, it's the same thing with Ole Miss. Like, I feel like Ole Miss, I watched them this week, and I came away. I said, maybe they're better than I thought they were going to be. But also, they played Mercer. But the defensive scheme just looked better. They looked more fun to watch on defense. They actually played defense, aside from the first play of the game, where they gave up like a 75-yard rushing touchdown to a quarterback. I think that there's really only so much you could say about week one.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's week one. I want to overreact and be like, oh, is Oklahoma back? Is Oklahoma back? Auburn looked good. They played UMass.
Is Wyoming really good?
Is Wyoming really good, or is Texas Tech still just Texas Tech? Is Texas the only team to worry about in the Big 12? I think there's so much that you could talk about in week one that everything just makes you ask another question. And I think we're going to answer a lot of them. Well, you're going to try and answer them this weekend. But this is just something that is so great about college football, though. I just go on a tangent for a second.
Yes.
Every week is another puzzle piece that you get to put down onto the table. And you don't really know what the picture is supposed to look like till the end of the year, and then you put them all together and you go, man, that team was really dominant. Or you say, wow, that team really underperformed for all the talent that they had. Like, even looking at last year, like Texas A&M, 5-7, they still have one of the most talented rosters in college football, and they looked pretty darn good on Saturday. With Petrino's offense, they were a little slow in the first half, and they really turned it on, and they actually blew somebody out. Like, man, talk about energy.
Yeah, they scored, what, 52 like, points, I think?
52 points. 52-10 was the final. That didn't happen last year, even against bad teams.
Not even against New Mexico.
So I mean, I got to say, like, did we undervalue A&M? Did we undervalue Arkansas? And I actually saw one of the CBS guys, Barrett Salee, actually came out and said something about, oh, I think Auburn can win 8 or 9 games. And I'm like, I've been saying that all offseason. All offseason.
I think there's only two certainties. Well, one certainty and one kind of, I'm pretty sure it's a certainty that we can take away from week one. First thing is, number one, Neil Brown will not be West Virginia's coach any longer after this season. That is a certainty.
Yeah, he's got like 1 or 2 weeks left.
If Neil Brown makes it to Wednesday, we'll see. Tomorrow's Wednesday. Everyone, keep your eyes on Bleacher Report. Neil Brown could very well no longer be the coach at West Virginia. Number two, Dave Aranda very well may have been overvalued as the head coach at Baylor because they looked terrible. And TJ Finley from Auburn, who Witt pointed out to me last night, went off for the Bobcats of Texas State and obliterated Baylor. Wild game.
Did you see the Texas State head coach hat?
No, I did not see it.
It said, take back the state of Texas. When did you ever have the state of Texas to begin with? When was the state of Texas not the University of Texas?
They are Texas State. They have to take back the state. So now, right now, they're just Texas.
Actually, I will say he's very young. He's only like 33.
So. I just think that's a very dumb marketing campaign.
It is a very dumb marketing campaign.
It'd be like Georgia Southern saying, take back Georgia. Like, come on, man.
Take back the southern portion of Georgia. I'll be honest. It sounds very Civil War-y, which is not good.
I don't know about you guys. I say let's go ahead and jump into our pour one out, cut them off. Do you guys even have anything prepared whatsoever?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Of course you do. Matt, what you got?
This week, got to pour one out for a legend. We're going to go off script here. We're not going to go college football, but I got to pour one out for a legend. Jimmy Buffett. May God rest his soul. one of my all-time favorite artists, and it's one of the weird, quirky things about me that not a lot of people know. I'm a huge Parrot head. I listen to Jimmy Buffett probably more than most other artists. Radio Margaritaville is one of my presets.
Cheeseburger in Paradise.
It's my number one preset, actually, in my personal truck. And I am just very sad that we lost this wonderful, wonderful human being. Phenomenal storyteller, phenomenal songwriter. And, you know, his songs and were able to just take you from whatever you were at to some beach or some vacation spot where it was warmer and there was white sand and blue water. And seeing the fans in Tuscaloosa, I don't know if y'all saw this or not, but they sang Margaritaville in between the third quarter. And, like, just hearing the whole stadium, that was really cool. So the man, the myth, the legend, Southern Miss graduate for
the boys from Hattiesburg.
He's
boy from Hattiesburg.
Well, he's actually from Gulfport, Mississippi. He's a Mississippi boy.
He's a boy from Hattiesburg now.
Nobody's fault.
And man, I just sad day to lose Jimmy Buffett. What a legend! Got to pour one out and then drink a margarita for one Jimmy Buffett. And this week, I'm cutting off the national media as a whole. I'm cutting off the national media because they seem to control the narrative around college football a lot. They don't really give little guys like, you know, us any attention. But really, if you look at a lot of the things that the national media was pushing all offseason, it was that, you know, Clemson's going to be back or not. It was that LSU was the favorite in the SEC. They sure didn't look like it on Saturday, and they could still win the SEC. But we were all told that these were certainties, that Colorado wasn't going to be good, that TCU was still going to be pretty good. They could be. The national media puts things out there sometimes that just baffle me, and I got to cut them off because I'm sick and tired of the talking heads on ESPN going on and on about. You know, I watched a lot of that North Carolina game, and I thought Drake May looked very average. I hear on this morning on national radio that it's a coin toss between Caleb Williams and Drake May for the first pick. Are you kidding me? Caleb Williams is infinitely better than Drake May. It's not close. And all the national media, Chad, what we got this week?
I am pouring one out. My favorite team in the Mountain West. And honestly, if Florida keeps going the way they're going, they might just be my favorite team to root for all the time. The boys in Laramie, the party in Laramie, Wyoming, the Cowboys, Andrew Peasley. Sorry. I don't know your name, buddy. But, man, that kid's tough. Wyoming takes down Texas Tech at the War. Unbelievable game. Overtime, double overtime in Laramie that rushed the field. The entire state of Wyoming, which is like 77 people, ran onto the field at the War. It was absolutely incredible to see. I love Wyoming football. I will always love Wyoming football, and it is an absolute wonderful thing to see Wyoming football get a gigantic win like that in Laramie. It was great. I absolutely love it. I'm cutting off CM Punk. Yes, that's right. I'm talking a little pro wrestling on today's show. CM Punk, the legend he is, been fired from All Elite Wrestling because he's been in All Elite Wrestling for 2 years. In that 2 years, he has managed to cause two backstage altercations that included lunging towards AEW president Tony Khan in Gorilla behind the curtain just outside of where they come into the entrance. Dude, at some point you have to look in the mirror and realize that you may be the problem. Left WWE and you blamed everybody else. You really have to blame this time when you're starting brawls backstage at AEW, man. that's enough about professional wrestling. Will Brooks cut off just like your very short UFC career.
While we wait for Wit, Pirate to 40. Mother, mother, ocean, I have heard you call.
It's staying away again in Margaritaville. Sun is hot and that old clock is moving slow. Oh, am I? Workday passes like molasses in wintertime. Hey, but it's July. Getting paid by the hour, older by the minute. Boss just pushed me over the limit. I could call him something. I think I'll just call it a day. Or miss something tall and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care. It's 5:00 somewhere.
Welcome back.
So I'm pouring one out for, y'all know my favorite sport is football, obviously. But I'm also a huge Braves fan, and I'm also a huge tennis fan. And right now we got the U.S. Open going on. U.S. has three players, men's players, in the quarterfinals. First time in a very, very long time. So it's super exciting. Great to see it. One of them actually got beat today, so he's out, but made it to the quarterfinals, lost to Djokovic. He's the number one player in the world, probably the best player of all time. And he, so it's looking pretty good. We got two Americans playing each other tonight. Winner plays Djokovic, and I'm actually sitting here watching it right now. There's one match before they start. It's Francis Tiafoe and Ben Shelton, who played at Florida and won a national championship in college, so... I'm actually for Big Shelton. I'm a big fan of his, but I like both those guys. So whoever wins, I'll be cheering for him to make it to the championship. And I am cutting off light beer because for some reason, I can't drink light beer right now. I don't know what's going on. Having a weird little thing happen. But I did drink Hail Southern IPA from a brewery whose name I do not remember and cannot shout out because I don't remember their name. But they were serving it at the Georgia Southern game this weekend, where I had a great time in Paulson Stadium, which I am also pouring one out for. So, Hail Southern, Eagles shutout against Citadel. Really fun watching them. We're about to pick their game coming up soon. And look forward to going back there. So, moving on to our picks of the week, we do have UAB at Georgia Southern to get us started. Chad, what do you think about this game?
Very interesting game, kind of a coin flip game. You get a lot of talent on both teams for the group of five. Two guys very early on in their coaching tenures, Clay Helton in year two at Georgia Southern. Former ESPN analyst and Baltimore Ravens quarterback Trent Dilfer is the head coach at UAB. UAB looked pretty good this past week, but so did Georgia Southern offensively. I don't necessarily think that Georgia Southern is going to have the best defensive game in the world. This is a UAB offense that still has a lot of weapons that can strike. UAB actually has a lot of homegrown talent from the state of Alabama and usually has a very talented team in the group of five. From what I saw and heard and kind of gathered from the way Georgia Southern played this weekend is their defense did tackle a lot better than we're used to seeing from the Eagles. So simply for the fact that this game is at Allen E. Paulson Stadium and the power of Paulson and the fight and Trent Dilfers are coming in, I'm going to go with the Eagles, man. You know, like we've all said on this podcast, never pick against Southern unless, you know, it's a realistic opportunity for them to lose. So I think that this is a realistic opportunity for Georgia Southern to lose, but this game's in Statesboro. It's not in Birmingham. Give me the Eagles. Whit.
Yeah, I'm not going to not pick against Georgia Southern. I was just there this weekend. Had a great time. Got to drink some beer. Georgia Southern's defense looks completely different than it did last year. I mean, they look phenomenal. So, like, I think this is their year to be good. I mean, to me, the offense might have taken a little bit of a step back. We did a lot of screens to receivers, and Citadel just couldn't tackle our guys. I mean, Georgia Southern's receivers are really solid. They're great players. But this year, I think it's going to really rely on the run game on the offensive side. I don't think the quarterback position is as strong as it should be. Not as strong as it was last year with Kyle Van Treese. So I think it's going to be defense and run game, which is really how Georgia Southern's always played. So I'm going Southern. I think they get the win over UAB. I think it'll be a close game. And set up UAB to go play Georgia in 2 weeks. So, Matt, what do you think? Next up, we got Notre Dame at NC State. Watch both these teams this weekend. NC State looked pretty solid with Brennan Armstrong taking over at quarterback. Notre Dame's looked good the first 2 weeks. Chad, who you got in this one?
Very interesting quarterback matchup. You got Sam Hartman taking on Brennan Armstrong. These guys still kind of at ACC schools in a way, I guess Sam Hartman is. Both came from Wake Forest and Virginia, staying kind of sort of in conference. Brennan Armstrong for sure staying in conference at NC State. Dave Dorian and this NC State team, they're always tough. They always battle. They have a lot of talent on that team. The reality is Notre Dame is just a better team. Notre Dame, with the way they've looked in the first 2 weeks, granted they played Navy and Tennessee State, they look really, really tough. Sam Hartman is, talked about it last week, probably going to have an opportunity to sit at New York at the end of the season. And this game is in Raleigh, and it's a noon kickoff, so it very well could be a tough environment. Raleigh is actually kind of a hard place to play. Not a lot of people realize that, but still going to have to go with Notre Dame. I think the game's probably going to be closer than people think it is, but Notre Dame kind of maybe pulls away late, wins by 10 or 13. I'm going to take the Irish on the road.
Chad, I'm with you, man. I think NC State is going to fall back a lot this year. Last year, they looked really good. Devin Leary's been a great quarterback for them. Devin Leary looked good for Kentucky this weekend. But with Brennan Armstrong, they just don't look like the same team. I think Notre Dame looks phenomenal with Sam Hartman. I think they're going to keep rolling. And I actually think this is a beatdown. So, taking the Irish in this one. So, next up, we got Nebraska at Colorado. Week two for Deion. Obviously looked good in week one. Shadeer Sanders looks phenomenal. Chad, who you got in this one?
And this all comes down to quarterback play. And also the fact that this game is big noon on Fox means that it's a 10 a.m. kickoff local time in Boulder. So a very early start. Probably going to be a little bit chilly out there in the mountains of Boulder. Not that that's not something Nebraska's dealt with before, but I think the difference in this game is 100% going to be quarterback play. If we're overreacting from week one, Shadeer Sanders versus Jeff Sims. I think we all know who the better-looking quarterback was the first week of the season. That's obviously Shadeer Sanders. Jeff Sims absolutely gave Nebraska's chances away. Beat Minnesota on Thursday night. I'm going to roll with the Buffs on this one. Early start favors the Buffs. Hard 10 a.m. kickoff in the way Jeff Sims struggled in week one. They got to go back-to-back games on the road at Minnesota and in Colorado. Be a tough environment. Man, Boulder is going to be on fire. For their first game, give me the Buffs. 2-0 start for prime time.
Yeah, I'm taking that too. 2-0. I think Shadeer has a big day. Nebraska's defense did not look good week one. I don't think they looked good at all. I'm a little bit worried about where they're heading this season because I thought Matt Rhule would have a quick turnaround. I don't think that's going to be the case. And honestly, when you think about it, I don't think anybody's had a quick turnaround in Nebraska. No one's even gotten close to it. So I'm looking at this game. I think this is going to be a beatdown for Colorado. I think they blow them away. It'll be a fun matchup to watch, but Colorado's just, you know, even without recruiting it, somehow has the best athletes, and it's mostly from the transfer portal. So credit to Deion. Shadeer's going to go off, maybe put his name down for a Heisman in week two. We'll see what happens there. But next up, we have Tulane at Ole Miss. Obviously, Ole Miss, the alma mater of Matt, who may or may not be sitting in his normal chair. Probably not right now. But obviously, this is going to be a big game. Tulane won week one against South Alabama, which is also a G5 powerhouse right now. Going into Oxford. So Ole Miss looked good. I guess Jackson Dart played most of the game. Spencer Sanders looked okay coming in and relieving him. So we'll see how they end up. Chad, what do you think?
I was just confirming that this game was in New Orleans, and it is. It's not in Oxford. This game is down at the home of the Green Wave. This game may be tight. This game may be tight at the start. Like Matt said, Ole Miss had some, what looked like some defensive improvements already on that side of the ball. They have three really good options at quarterback. Spencer Sanders had a decent day. They pretty much all had decent days. Granted, it was against Mercer. This is very low key, tough challenge for Ole Miss to go on the road. An old school SEC matchup. Like, this is a way, way old SEC matchup from back before realignment existed. So, me, Ole Miss, I got Ole Miss pulling away late, maybe by 7-10. I think this game's going to be way tighter than people think it is. Tulane's probably the best team in the G5. Tight game. Give me the Rebels. I think the Rebels have too much talent. Like I said, going to be tied early. Give me the Rebels to go over the green wave. Ladies and gentlemen, Matthew has returned. Matt, give us your pick for Ole Miss at Tulane.
Ooh, Ole Miss Tulane. Perfect timing.
Do you buy Matt's Realtor?
Shout out Brian Gardner, Gardner Realty, Gardner Family Realty. If you're looking to buy a home in the Atlanta area, get realtors to work with. So I've got a house for sale. maybe not anymore, though.
Oh,
got an offer.
Let's go. Let's go. All right. And now it's on the podcast.
Live. Well, we'll see how it goes. We'll see if they,
My housewarming gift to you is going to be a box of whales.
We'll appreciate that. All right. So Ole Miss, Tulane. If you look at helmets, you say Ole Miss wins this game by 2-3 touchdowns. You look at roster construction, I think this game's going to be much, much closer than a lot of people are thinking. Tulane, let's not forget Michael Pratt, quarterback at Tulane last year. They beat USC. He returns to Tulane. He played really well against a very good South Alabama team. And I don't want to, say that South Alabama is as good as an SEC team, but they're a very, very good Sun Belt team. And they're a very good Group of Five team. Tulane has been on a roll momentum-wise lately. Just got that massive deal for all their facility upgrades. A lot of good to say about them. If you're Ole Miss, you have to be a little disappointed because you're going to play at Tulane. In what world does an SEC team go to a Group of Five team? I know it's an old rivalry. I understand playing them. I don't understand playing them there. That's a little weird to me. Ole Miss, I thought they looked outstanding on Saturday. Obviously, it was Mercer. Jackson Dart looked very sharp, had good anticipation on his throws, was making the right reads. Very, very, very good quarterback play from Jackson Dart. Nothing but great things to see from him. Spencer Sanders came in, played really well. Defense had one lapse, and it was the first play of the game. But that scheme, Pete Golding looks like he knows how to coach some defense. He knows how to give up chunk plays, but he knows how to coach defense. I got Ole Miss winning this, but in a very close game. I think they win by 10.
Surprise! I think Tulane wins this game. I had Ole Miss literally like in my picks, like when I did all my SEC predictions. I had Ole Miss winning. I watched last week. I didn't think Ole Miss looked bad, but they kind of seemed a little off to me. And granted, it was week one. I don't know if that's just how things are working right now, but Tulane is strong. I like Clayton Tune, or not Clayton Tune. What's his name? I can't even fucking remember.
Michael Pratt.
I like Michael Pratt. Great player. A very memorable player. And obviously, big fan of Coach Willie Fritz. So I think Tulane goes in, beats Ole Miss at home, and staples their name down for Group of Five powerhouse once again this season. After that, go ahead.
I've got to ask one question, Whit.
Hit me.
What about Ole Miss scoring 73 points? Looks sloppy to you.
It's pretty terrible to me, man. I mean, like, you have the chance to score 100 and you can't even get there. I mean, granted, I watched like half a second of the first half, so we're going to flag that so people don't know that.
All right, so a little bit of a Uno reverse card here. Since Matt was on the phone with his realtor, we're now going to allow Matt to run through three games really fast.
Hit it.
Matt, UAB at Southern.
Pick Southern.
Why did you have to think about that so long?
You can provide more insight than that.
I've got an affinity for the Blazers. I think that the Blazers are a program. The UAB is a program that is a very proud program as one of those, like, it is not the University of Alabama at Birmingham Crimson Tide. And for those of you that need me to explain this, five. University of Alabama at Birmingham is a separate institution from the University of Alabama at Tuscaloosa. But they're all part of the same state university system. So,
God,
anyways, it's a surplus. It's an inside joke.
I'll be six.
So now you're six. So, but no, UAB, I really feel like they're a program that it's people within the state have a very similar feeling about UAB to they do to the Georgia Southern in the state of Georgia. There's a lot of backing there. They've had a lot of talent on that team the past few years. I think they've taken a step back since our main man retired. I cannot think the Bill.
Bill Clark.
When Bill Clark retired, everything kind of seemed to slowly go a little bit away. But you know, Georgia Southern is Georgia Southern is Georgia Southern. Make me nervous. And I went to Georgia Southern. Hail Southern. He's by 90.
All right.
Next pick.
Go ahead, Chad. Chad, you're rolling with it.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, next pick, you got Notre Dame at NC State.
Yes, Matt, the Fighting Irish are traveling to play the Wolfpack.
Me and Chad both had Notre Dame.
It's in Raleigh, and I've got Notre Dame as well. I think Sam Hartman makes his return back to the state of North Carolina in a big way. I think Dave Doering is a good head coach. I think the North Carolina State's a very mediocre ACC team. I think Notre Dame was 3-0 and makes their matchup with Ohio State, and that's next week, correct? When Notre Dame goes marching, or when Columbus Buckeyes come to South Bend,
week three. Yep. Now that's the same weekend. So, I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin, watching the Eagles beat up on the Badgers.
It'll be at Ole Miss without.
And
one.
I will be in Oxford watching the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets get gone by the Rebs. I got Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame is going to win this game. I think NC State is a very mediocre ACC team, similar to like Duke. But I think Notre Dame is just better talent-wise, and I think Marcus Freeman has got that a better, more talented quarterback, more talented defense, and that's what's going to be the difference, Notre Dame.
Old rivalry from the 90s in the Big 12. Matt Rhule and his new Huskers coming to Dion. 10 a.m. kickoff local time.
Yeah, 10 a.m. kickoff. That's rough. Sneaky, like, watch out. Is Dion's team going to be able to play at that high altitude? Like Travis Hunter, 120 snaps. Is he going to be able to do that in a high altitude stadium? I think that's a lot of snaps to play, and it does matter. You know, playing in Fort Worth is a lot different than playing in the mountains in Boulder, Colorado. Nebraska didn't play bad against Minnesota. They made mistakes. Jeff Sims cost them that game, but the defense looked really good. I wouldn't say Minnesota is overly great, looked great either. So, I mean, it's a very, you know, it's hard to tell after 1 week, and with the Buffs getting all the hype, I think defense travels, but I got to do it. I'm going Dion. I think the Buffs are gonna come out on top here. They've got more athletes than Nebraska does right now, and I think they've got a little bit better of a roster, and they get the edge at quarterback as well. Shedeur Sanders is gonna, you know, continue making a push to have his name in New York.
Now with Matt caught back up, back to you, Whit.
Back to me. I'll take it. And we got a fun one. Second to last game we're picking this week. A&M, Texas A&M against Miami, playing in Miami, Hard Rock Stadium. So little home and home from last year. They played at Texas A&M last season. A&M won a pretty tight game, if I remember correctly. Obviously, both teams disappointed last year. Both teams have some higher expectations coming into this season. Chad, start us off. Who you got?
Weirdly enough, I think Texas A&M is going to win. I think Texas A&M is probably going to win kind of handily. I really do. Connor Wegman, pretty good. And again, these two teams played Mexico and Miami of Ohio. Miami, Florida, obviously showed the world where the real Miami is. In Florida, not Ohio. I think Texas A&M overall has the better talent roster. Mario Cristobal is a phenomenal recruiter. He did a lot of work in the transfer portal this past season. Not taking any of that away. However, I just think that Texas A&M already has some more established talent, and that this is a team playing for something to prove. Came out, like Matt said earlier on in the show, and actually played well against New Mexico. Not something they did last year or have been doing under Jimbo Fisher against teams in games that they know they should win, like the UMass game last year where they struggled, like App State where they lost last year. Texas A&M, top to bottom, more talented team. That's why I'm going to have to go with the Aggies in this one. Also, you've seen Miami have a home game. It's not much of an environment, so I don't think that's going to pose a problem for the Aggies. Give me the Aggies. I'm actually going to go by 2 touchdowns. Give me the Aggies by 14.
What do you think, Matt?
I'm actually going Texas A&M here as well. Last year, Texas A&M won that game by 8, 17-9. It was in College Station, but that Texas A&M offense was abysmal last year. The defense was still decent at times. Texas A&M is a top 5 roster if you look at talent alone. In talent construction, they're top 5 in the country. Maybe top 4, but definitely top 5 in the country in just pure roster talent. They were very, very poorly coached offensively last year. I think that Miami could be being very well slept on right now. Mario Cristobal going into Miami last year, having a decent year recruiting. I just don't see it yet for them. And I thought that they looked a little sloppy at times against Miami of Ohio. To me, if you look at these two teams from a purely roster construction standpoint, A&M should win this game by a lot. This year, I think Miami is going to be able to hold their own a little bit. Bobby Petrino running that offense has definitely changed it. They scored 52 points against New Mexico. They didn't do that against them last year. They blew a team out. I think Texas A&M wins this game, and I'm with Chad. I think it's by multiple scores. What are your thoughts?
No, I'm with you guys, too. I think A&M big. I don't like where Miami's at right now. To me, it's kind of a I got to see it to believe it kind of deal. I think they're recruiting well, but they still need to put it on the field. And like, I don't know, like they might could get there. I mean, I don't think Tyler Van Dyke is terrible. Last season, he really didn't look good. But I just don't see it from Miami. So I'm going to go A&M. I'm going to agree with Chad. I think it's going to be about 2 touchdowns, even with it being at Miami. So game of the week. Obviously, Matt, I see some sweat coming down your forehead a little bit just as we begin to talk about this game. We got Texas at Alabama. This is one that I don't know about you guys, but pretty much all offseason I've seen, like, this is the year Texas is going to beat Alabama at home. Like, going in the SEC next year, so much going on. Last year, obviously played at Texas. Alabama barely scrapes by with a win, 20-19, I believe, with the score. Texas coming in with lots of expectations. Same with Alabama. Matt, we'll let you go last. Chad, what you got?
So uncomfortable making a pick about Alabama with Matt in the same room. I've never had to do it before. Oh, my goodness.
That's true. I didn't even think about that.
Overall, if we look at the body of work from both these teams in week one, it was solid. Alabama, Jalen Milroe looked good. Alabama did what they were supposed to do. Texas did not break Josh Pate's number one rule, and that is you don't lose to food. They beat Rice. T. Daniels, not have a good day. Rice. Both these teams did what they were supposed to do. This is going to be a phenomenal football game. Last year, it was one of the early games of the year. Last year, you could make the argument that if Quinn Ewers doesn't get hurt, then Texas wins this game. However, they had their opportunity to do so in Austin. This is in Tuscaloosa. Said it when we made our preseason picks. I think Alabama is going to get back to joyless murder ball, and running the ball down your throat and not putting Jalen Milroe in a lot of situations that are going to allow him to make mistakes. They're going to do it this week on a grand level. Alabama, to the crowd in Tuscaloosa, is going to beat Texas at home. It is going to be a barn burner. In fact, I was thinking about inviting Matt over to watch the game. I'm not so sure that my furniture or my home will be safe if it doesn't go his way. But I am going to roll with the Tide. Be close. Me a 3-point win for the Tide.
Yeah, I'm with you, Chad. I think Alabama is just too talented. everybody wants to talk about what Texas has coming in this year. I think their offense is going to be really solid. I think the one thing that kind of holds me back from picking Alabama is they have a couple DBs hurt coming into this game. I don't know which two, but I did see there was two that were kind of scraping by.
Kind of more in Jalen Key.
Those are two good players. So, I guess. I don't know who Jalen Key is, but Malachi Moore is a good player. So, that's
he's a starter.
And that's tough. And Texas has a very good quarterback. They have very good receivers. Very, very good receivers. But I still think Texas is weak on defense. And I think Chad's right. They do. Alabama's got a strong offensive line, a strong running game, and a very good running quarterback. So, I think it's going to be lots of running the ball. Lots of pushing around Texas. I think the defense plays strong, even with the DBs out. So I think it's going to be a lower scoring game, and I think Alabama's going to win. And I do think it's going to be – I think it's going to be close, but I think at the end, Alabama will win by at least two touchdowns. Matt, let's hear it.
All right.
You got 10 minutes.
Beautiful. So I can go longer than I was planning on. No, 2 minutes. So look, if – I want to talk about this for a second just because last week I thought Alabama looked like Alabama again. And I know it was against Middle Tennessee and everyone's going to say, yeah, whatever, it was Middle Tennessee. I explained this to a couple of people already this week. If you go back and you watch Alabama against FCS opponents or you know, Tier 3, Group of 5 teams like we played this past week, in the years of Bryce Young and Bill O'Brien's offense, you saw Alabama finesse beating those teams down. We're going to air it out. We're going to throw the ball deep. The offensive line didn't play super physical. They would just kind of like out-talent other teams and win by 60. There was never a moment where you were like, man, they're just absolutely beating the hell out of these guys. And I thought on Saturday, for the first time in a long time, Alabama came out and started throwing haymakers from the jump on the in the trenches. Offensive line was pushing around. Defensive line looked like they had a little bit of extra juice and physicality in them this year. Obviously, there's a talent gap, so there's only so much I can say from seeing that one game. To me, the attitude looks like it's a little bit back. And it looks like Saban kind of had his thumbprint on it. And if you listen to him the beginning of the year, his first episode of Hey Coach, asked him, you know, so what do you think that this team's like realistic chances of winning a championship are? And he gave a very Nick Saban championship like answer in saying, you know, I don't know that this team's really got it in them to win a championship, but you know, we'll see. And they're going to play really hard, which makes me smile because that means that deep down, this man knows that he's got the talent on that team to win a championship. He's trying to light the fire, and he's trying to get them to understand that that's what they want. I'm scared because I'm not super nervous about this game. I think we should beat the shit out of Texas. I really do, man. And like, I watched Texas play Rice, and I saw Quinn Ewers last year against Alabama. But look at every other game Quinn Ewers played in last year. He didn't look comfortable against anybody else. Was it because he was still dealing with a little bit of, like, lingering injury? Maybe, but guess who's still on the field this year for Alabama? Dallas Turner. Guess who's still on the field this year for Alabama? You've got – there's talent there. And they're if they play physical to the standard of Alabama, this could be the week that Alabama goes back on watch and puts everybody on notice that, like, hey, remember when y'all thought we were down and out? And it makes me nervous to say this and feel this way. Because I do understand that they're in the back of my mind. I do realize that there's a possibility that we lose this game, and I look like a complete jackass by saying all this. I mean, and it's very plausible for that to happen. But I've got to admit that I really do think that we should beat Texas by 17 points. I think it'll be close early because we're not that team that we were before where we're going to dump the gun and trying to throw it, push the ball downfield. But man, I liked what I saw from that running back stable too. I mean, three guys, Justice Haynes got his first touchdown as a true freshman. That running back stable looks more like Alabama. Wydell Williams, Jace McClellan, Justice Haynes. Give it to me, baby. I'm pumped up. I'm ready for this game on Saturday. Let's go ahead and lace them up right now and play some damn football. American collegiate tackle style, baby. Todd!
Thank you for watching this week's edition of Rowdy Southern Saturday. If you would like to donate to the psych ward, but we'll be sending Matt after the show, please go to the link at the bottom of the description. All proceeds will go towards psychotic behavior. Thank you, and you have a blessed day.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into Rowdy Southern Saturday. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Music, and follow our social media at Rowdy Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.